That's what they call insurance.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 98 of Sapnin Podcast with my fantastically looking self, Sean Smith, and my moderate, fair-looking friend, Morgan Richards, also known as Mo Dick.
It's me, Morgan Richards. You're using that one quite a lot. I don't know what you're trying to say. But anyway, this episode, if it was an article, it would feature trouble gum angles, newsworthy headlines, and pieces of die laughing content.
Go on, what are they from?
It's a mixture of journalism puns and therapy puns.
Funds. Therapy funds.
Yeah.
is it? All right. Yeah, don't do that ever again. Yeah, this week's guest is a friend of mine and now Morgan's. Yes, lovely, lovely Geordie, journalist, author, turned rock radio producer. He's done loads of jobs. This week's guest is the fantastic Simon Young.
Yes, intellectual music journalist, published author, and first wave podcaster Simon Young is an adored Geordie figure inside the music industry here in Britain, and he's got a CV that will impress you and your grandmother. That's how ludicrous it is. He's worked for Kerrang! Magazine for over 15 years and various roles as a writer and deputy editor, produced the BBC One radio rock show with Daniel P. Carter, countless freelance stuff, and just an all-round beautiful Geordie bastard. But now, Sean, released a book.
What?
Yes, a real one. A real one with pages, a cover, and everything.
I don't believe you.
Mm-hmm. And it's called So Much for the 30-Year Plan, the official and authorised biography by Irish metal titans Therapy.
That was terrible reading on your part, but yes, Simon's book is out now. Go and check it out. If you're a fan of Therapy, check it out. If you're not a fan of Therapy and you like funny English people, Simon Young is one of them. So, I'm sure the book is extremely interesting. As you'll find out during the interview, he's a massive fan of Therapy. And, yeah, what are some of the stories he tells us about, Morg?
Well, literally, with this book coming out now, we thought it was the best time to get him on because, as I said, his career is astonishing. He's talking about all those various roles he's being in, the differences, some of the struggles, the highlights, but getting to tour and be on the road while writing features for the likes of Iron Maiden,
have you heard of them?
Metallica, Linkin Park, Offspring,
Pretty Fly
for white guys, and so much more. It gets into his worst time as a journalist, having to report after the 9/11 incidents. It's just some crazy.
It's chock-a-block full of stories.
There's so much. There's even a dog in this episode, Sean. That's how much we've crammed into it. There's even a dog.
Do you know what? For a slight second, because we did this interview like a week or two ago, I genuinely forgot about the dog, and I was like, when did we have a dog in? And I remember his dog. So, yeah. Thanks again to Simon Young. Thanks again for being a tidy fella over the years, because I reckon I can count on one hand how many journalists in the rock metal scene I'm probably really friends with, and I'd like to think Simon is one of them. So thank you very much for giving us the time. You're a superstar. You've always been lovely to me and my bands. Keep on going with Raiders, or I will retract everything I just fucking said.
Oh, but just to say as well, he gives loads of advice for future journalists, some insights into how you can get started in the industry, and he has a very good Newcastle Geordie banter. Now, we do have listeners from all over the world, so if you're not used to some of the dry Geordie banter, it's a perfect introduction to you. And with the book, So Much for the 30-Year Plan, it was so successful in its first bit of release that it was completely sold out.
Nice. What a sellout.
Physical copies have been completely sold out. They're now reprinting some. I think at the time of recording this, you might be able to get some online now from various different outlets. I've got one coming to my house later on today.
Shut up, have you?
I actually have.
You sent it to us all?
No, yeah, but I bought a physical copy with my own money, Sean. I don't just preach things on the podcast and don't come through with them. If I'm telling you to go and get a record or going to get a book or something,
you can't buy records, man. You can't buy records. What? Who's buying records? What? You can buy records. You can still buy records.
You can.
I thought you could just listen to on Spotify and then not give the artist any money whatsoever and expect them to just survive on fresh fucking air.
That's how much of a nice guy I am, Sean. I like
what
to give some bands some money.
Well, say, tell you what, say, you know, there was no fee for you coming on the podcast, but I think now you owe Morgan a couple of quid. So, yeah, nice, Morg, nice. Let me know. To tell you what, I'll borrow it after you. Don't tell Simon. Simon, you didn't hear that.
But digital copies are available from wherever you get digital stuff from. So, like, your phone, your Kindle.
Don't fucking name every device, Morg.
But who has a Kindle, though?
iPad,
do you know anyone that has a Kindle?
Yes, my mother.
Okay. Well, Jan can download it on Kindle.
Go on. Carry on. Go on. What's an idiot that has a Kindle? Go on, tell me. Go on. Have a go, Jan. I might be 30 miles away, but I reckon I could throw a punch so hard that it might reach you. Go on, have a go, my mum. No,
I said we love Jan. You said
what sort of mouth-breathing Merthyr Tydfil scumbag would have a Kindle? Funnily enough, on Jan's Kindle, I downloaded a book by a guy called Charles Hall about UFOs and aliens, which was very interesting. So technically, I've used a Kindle. So if you're having a go at Jan, which you obviously were, you're having a go at me, right? And when you are lucky there's a local lockdown, otherwise we'd be doing this now with me speeding down the A470 towards Cardiff to kick your head in. Anyway, wow. Thank you again to Simon Young. Brilliant, brilliant chat. What a legend. If you've enjoyed any of these 98, technically 99 because we did a bonus episode as well, I suppose, but we call this 98 episodes of content and nonsense, consense, trademark Sean Smith, 2018. Please think about checking us out online at Sappening Pod on Twitter and Instagram. That's at, it's not at, yeah, it's French. And in French, no. At SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD. Tidy.
What are we trying to do? Offend as many people as we can in the intro. Sorry to any Kindle readers. Sorry to any French people.
No. Whoa, good back. What the fuck's wrong with the French? I accidentally slipped into it because I love it so much. What are you having a go at? You're having a go at Kindle. Le owner de Kindle. Right, you're having a go then, and then you're having a go at La French. You have changed, but this has gone to your head.
Oh la la. Anyway, yes, we love every single person. We love everyone. Doesn't matter. Anyway, if you're checking us out online at Sappening Pod, please go and check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/sappening as well. If you like our rambles, want to give back and even more crazy content, that is the place to be.
Yes, if you want to hear more of this Welsh rambling bullshit, our bonus content is the place for you, because it's where I let my real opinions out, because I have to, you know, I can't be true to self all the time on you, because I don't want people to think I hate Scar. Oh no, I've just said it. Shit. Too late. Anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for getting this far. I think we should head over to Simon Young. What do you reckon?
Yes, let's get witty, astonishing, funny journalist that is Simon Yun on
here. Astonishing. You were running out of words.
Yeah,
no, he's cool. He's good.
He is cool. But,
well, no. Oh, for fuck's sake, let's just get on with it. Sapnin!
Sapnin.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Sapnin.
It was alright. It was a bit unenthusiastic, it was, Simon. I'm gonna
Sapnin.
There it is. There it is. The lovely Geordie charisma of journalist, author, lovely chap. Always been nice to me. The fantastic Simon Yun.
Yes.
How are you, Simon?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right.
Yeah,
I'm all right.
Not bad.
I haven't seen you for a while, so this is a treat.
Yeah, it's been quite a while. I left Kerrang about 2014, so it would have been just before then, probably.
Yeah, we split up in 2015 we split up. So, it was probably just as you left, I suppose. What have you been up to since?
So I left Kerrang in 2014 and then I joined Dan Carter's Rock Show's producer and I did that for a year. And then I joined Team Rock as an editor of teamrock.com and I did that for about 2 years until it crashed and burned just before Christmas.
Nice. Just what you want.
Yeah. Then I've just been freelancing ever since. So,
nice.
And writing books and all sorts. It's been good.
Well, nice. Yeah, well, there's so much we're going to get to it into this conversation. But as you said already, throughout your career, you've had loads of different job titles and roles and stuff. Can you just go through kind of the differences of some of those bits of work to start? Because obviously you were at Kerrang as a writer and editor for over 15 years. You had that year, as you said, with Dan Carter on The Rock Show on Radio 1. Well, I mean, how did everything really come about and how different has those roles been over the years?
I did some work. I did a fanzine. I was a runner for a TV company in... Sorry, that's the sound of my a puppy that's chewing my hand. I became a runner in London sort of 98 and I was doing like long night shifts and not doing much at all because I was kind of at the beck and call of staff who wanted a coffee here and then. And so I started to do a fanzine because I did a bit of music writing when I was at university. And Curb Dog was the only band I did an actual interview with and the rest was sort of reviews. And I just really enjoyed it. And I'd always wanted to be a music writer, because I'd kind of started writing Kerrang, reading Kerrang, sorry, since I was about 12. So did a fanzine, and I just kept bumming into like Phil Alexander and various members of the Kerrang staff at gigs, because I went to as many gigs as I could when I was doing day shifts and stuff. And I just did a fanzine. I handed it to him, and then I became a... Yes, that's true, Larry. Yeah. So I did some work experience in early 99, and it was sort of in the spring. I bumped into Ashley Bird at Cable's last gig, and he said, "Oh, we need someone to file some photographs. Do you fancy just coming in for a few days and you know, doing that then?" And that is true.
I'm waiting for the dog to correct you. I'm waiting for, you go, "Oh no, actually no, you are right, it was 98
Larry said it was late May. It was at Dingwalls. Yes, that's right. And I went in to just file some pictures and didn't really leave, because I did work experience in the February, and I didn't want to leave then. I had such a good week. Ended up going for a curry with them after the mag went to print on the Friday. And I was gutted when I had to go back to working at a pub in Southgate in North London. But yeah, he asked me to do some picture filing, and I just did it. And I sort of ended up doing a column about the internet called Webhead. And it was like, you know, wild and wacky websites at the time. And looking back at those first columns, it's amazing how primitive the internet looked at the time and what people were happy to click on. So yeah, it was good. And I sort of did the news. I did the readers' letters after that. Just my job just increased incrementally. And then I kind of went freelance for a while so I could do features and stuff. And then I became a sort of member of staff a couple of years after that, because I kind of craved kind of a bit of a stable job just with being in London and things. Yeah, then I became, what happened next? I became sort of a news assistant to Dom Lawson and then Nicola Brown, then became news editor. And I sort of in the mid 2000s, I started doing an audio podcast, and that kind of quickly became a video podcast, and sort of that ran in tandem with working on the print. And I enjoy both them sort of just as much as each other, but I was kind of in the office all the time, and then eventually became deputy editor of a magazine I grew up worshipping. And it was a surreal journey. It was great.
Yeah. Do you remember like the first time that you like spoke to a band that you were like, "How the fuck am I speaking to these? Like, how have I got access to these?"
Iron Maiden in a splitter. it would have been 2000, because they were doing like some European shows before they did this huge gig in London. And it was basically a sort of a small on the road piece with questions from celebrities. So I had like a list of questions from people like Gina Marino and Kerry King. And I was just sat. So we did the interview sort of traveling between the hotel and it was either somewhere in France or it was like Holland, because they did two shows, one after the other. I think their manager Rod told them that I'd been a fan since I was a kid. So, you know, don't expect to be, you know, troubled too much by, you know, hard questions and stuff. But while I was chatting, I just blanked completely. And all I could think about was like the posters I had on my bedroom wall and seeing them in Whitley Bay when I was 12. But they were fantastic. And I got to do a good handful of cover features with them and various bits and pieces over the years. And they always remembered and were always fantastic. And it was great to, you know, they always say don't meet your heroes, but I have met a lot of heroes and I've never been disappointed.
Yeah.
Snap.
At all.
Snap. Yeah. That's the thing. Like I was actually talking to my friend earlier. I was a tattooist. I popped by his shop, masked, of course. I'm not a maniac. Yeah, we were talking about like meeting heroes and stuff, and like I genuinely thought Fred Durst was going to be a massive dick to me, and he turned out to be absolutely lovely, which was unbelievable. But was there did you come across Many dickheads? Surely you must have come across dickheads, because I know I did.
I've met... There's been interviews where it's hard going. Like, some interviews are fantastic and just, like, a conversation with a mate type thing.
Yeah.
But there's been, like... Linkin Park were hard work, but it was literally a few days after 9/11, and they couldn't really go home because of the flight bans and stuff. So they were kind of stuck having to fulfill their kind of tour and stuff. Anyway, these were big shows as well. Mike Shinoda is very diplomatic about it all, but Chester Bennington just did not want to be there, and it was kind of he wasn't like picking a fight during the argument, but it wasn't. The nature of the questions weren't being taken in the spirit they were intended, and he called me a bastard, and photo shoot was painful to watch. It was like watching a group of men just, if they could be any further from that dressing room, they would in a heartbeat. And it was just a surreal few days. Just the world was a really surreal place for a few days. Mm. And it just wasn't... It was just really strange. And as a result, I think I wrote the worst feature I'd ever written in my life.
Oh, really?
It was just, I don't know. The quotes were there, but it was just hard to write for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. But like with stuff like that as well, like, it must just be doing that at that time, such a, like, an awkward experience and wrong place, right time kind of thing. I think it does have that effect.
It was, it really spilled into just the whole, because you kind of go into features, you spent a few days on the road with a massive band because they were huge at that point, very quickly. And it just spilled into the writing, I think. And I just thought, I don't know if I can do this, because the feature was sent back a few times to tweak and rewrite. And I was just like, I think this is it. This is probably the last bit of work I'm going to do. And it was really stressful. And that nagging doubt sometimes revisits me even now. It's really strange. But you could, like, all of the American bands who were doing promo around that time, they were having to kind of carry on with what they were doing. But just everyone was just like, I'm not sure if this is right to do it this time. It felt very banal asking about fun off the cuff questions when there was one band from New York. He still hadn't found out whether his friend was safe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he had to come in and do bits and pieces, and he ended up just calling it off as he got there, basically. Wow. It was just a very strange time.
Did you ever get to speak to Linkin Park after, or did you try to stay away from him?
I don't think I interviewed Chester again after that, but... Mike, I did a few times afterwards, and he was always fine. He was always nice. It was just a weird time for the band, so I didn't, I didn't hold it against them. It was just, I just remember how hard it was, and I just, because up till then, all my interviews were really plain sailing, and had to do what I had to do, and it was fine.
Yeah, because one of the things I wanted to mention, I mean, Sean and I were talking beforehand, and you've been known for doing some very off-the-cuff, fun kind of stories, interviews and stuff like that throughout your career. We, if you just look at the Google images of you, the first thing that comes up is...
Is it a vest?
a vest? I don't know.
I'm not sure if it's a fella's... if it's a fella's vest.
I think it's been discussed. I think it's been described as a singlet.
Oh, nice.
It's not even a vest you'd see someone masculine, like someone from Sick of It All wearing. It was very dainty and too small for my podgy frame. And I just decided to wear it on a video podcast, much to Gustav from Young Guns' amusement.
Yeah, it looked like he was struggling to make eye contact, I've got to say.
Yeah, my eyes are up here. And it's around then that I realized that the internet is forever. So
that's
the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But staying on the positive side of things, I mean, is that always something you've tried to incorporate in your work, is to try and have fun with it? Obviously, there's scenarios where serious stories and you need to be a bit more professional, let's say, but is it always trying to make the work fun for both you and whoever else is involved?
Yeah, I think so. There's been times where I've been given like serious, I mean, most of the features have been serious,
yeah,
to some degree. If there's, like, I did something with Miles from Alter Bridge, and it was talking about a loss of a parent and stuff, and that's happened to me, so I think I was given that job because I had a large degree of empathy and experience with that. But the most serious pieces would go to like Paul Branigan and Ian Winwood and Tom Bryant and stuff, and I think because of the podcast and just because of the way I am in serious situations, I tend to veer on the let's try and make someone laugh and keep the levels up. I'd be given the more fun kind of aspects of, you know, the magazine.
Yeah, I remember back from my days when where people were interested in what I was doing musically. I was always happy to find out if we were speaking to you, because you're a very funny chap, and I always loved some of my favorite bits of Kerrang were Simon Young's captions on photos.
All right. Yeah, that was the thing I was given a lot to do.
Yeah, basically, right, I remember Front, I think it was Front, yeah, and like Loaded, I would buy them, and it would literally just be for how funny the captions were, and it genuinely got like that with Kerrang for me with you. So
right,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, I
love doing the captions. I was just thinking about podcasts the other day, and do you remember when it was Reading and I interviewed you and Bob, and I didn't do the white balance at the start of the video, and Bob came out where he was just like,
kind of like I am now by this big window. Yeah,
Can I do it again? Because I can't see your head in the frame. that was so embarrassing. I don't think Bob's fine. Ever forgotten it. So shiny that day.
It held the grudge, let me tell you.
But the thing is, it doesn't take long for something else to come and piss him off, mind. So he probably does remember it, but he's not angry at that at the moment. Because he's currently locked down. I'm the only one in my band who's allowed to travel freely to other places in Wales or England or wherever I want to go. Because Bob is in Caerphilly, so he's trapped. And our drummer and our bassist live in the Rhondda Cynon Taf, which has just been locked down. So I'm the only one in my band who's now allowed out at the moment.
I didn't realise Wales was undergoing a lockdown. I know Newcastle and surrounding areas have, but I didn't realise Wales was under the...
Yeah, local ones.
There's a lot of conspiracy theorists and anti-maskers where I come from. Like, Facebook is a cesspool of idiots.
Yeah.
It's fucking driving me mad.
The last couple of years has really brought out the cream of crazy now.
It's strange. I just find it bonkers how they would rather believe some elaborate ruse than... I think it's because they're not excited by the fact it's just a virus that's killing people. They need something like, oh, there's got to be like a government thing, or there's QAnon and all that insane shit. And it's just, people are just looking for something because they're bored, I think. And it's going to be the end of the world, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, I think Facebook now. Yeah, well, we've gone. I like it. We've gone off Kerrang. I like that one. We've gone, do you know what? We're all good. Yeah, this is the end of the world soon. Something I wanted to ask about... your days at Kerrang. I know, like, I only found this out quite a while after, but I remember we took we went to Japan once, and we had Ian Winwood with us.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't realise it way after that the band had to pay for him to fly out, I think. Did you get to go on many trips like that?
I never managed to do the the coveted sort of Japan trips, because that was like the holy grail. Just because of the frequency, like British bands or American bands would go out there. I did a lot of American trips when I went to like South America with Iron Maiden, with Ashley Mail, and that remained one of my favorite ever experiences. So I went to Rio de Janeiro, and Sao Paulo, and on the day off, Bruce Dickinson, we got a helicopter from the top of our hotel. And the promoter had basically put on like Formula 3?
I think so.
Similar, like, there was a local driver who's a famous Formula 3 driver, and he wanted to take Bruce Dickinson driving around to Interlagos Grand Prix circuit.
Yeah.
And we got to watch that, and we went go-karting with him, and then Bruce Dickinson went fencing with like local, like Olympic standard fences, and he just didn't stop all day.
Of course he did.
Unbelievable.
Of course he did.
There's days, ways of spending a day off, and he just lived it. With sweat at the end.
Unbelievable. You know,
just going in a helicopter to watch someone do something cool while I should have been in the office by all accounts. And it was stuff like that. But I went to like New York and LA and stuff like that. But at the start, everyone would be going off everywhere at all times. Like I remember Paul Branigan, when he was freelance, came in from something like a Smashing Pumpkins trip in America, came into the office, wrote it up, went home to pack. Then he was back out to America the next day for something else.
Wow. And
gradually that kind of frequency, dwindled to like, You can do a phoner if you want.
We're in America. Yeah. Form the
There's
blackout
the
while we're in
the
America.
Job. Yeah. With a call I generally have to pay for as well.
Rude. Yeah. That's the thing. But while we're talking about your time in Kerrang and everything, I wanted to ask a bit more about that deputy editor role, because I don't think a lot of people realize that kind of work and kind of stress, organization, everything that goes into it. Can you talk about like your day to day at that time?
Yeah. So I was deputy editor for about a year and a half, and so James McMahon was the editor. So he kind of looked after the big stuff, like the covers and, you know, the big things like meeting the labels and kind of courting managers and stuff to get, you know, the big stars for the issues and stuff. And mine would be kind of more of a day-to-day thing in the office and making sure things were running smoothly. And it was pretty stressful. Yeah. That's right.
Perfect timing. Dog's got comedy timing now.
He did a month on a monthly magazine, and he said never again. It was just maintain the day to day stuff, but then you've got things like the internet to consider, and then I was doing the podcast as well, and it was just it was really hard. It was really hard work. But it was very satisfying at the same time. And it was just surreal to reach that level in a magazine I'd started at the, you know, making tea and writing about the internet and coveting all the free stuff that went into a big cupboard and sometimes borrowed. And
what was the best thing you've had for free, Sam?
I was once sent a Kermit with a Weezer t-shirt when Gone Fishing came out.
What?
And, I went on eBay and paid for quite a few presents for Christmas. So.
I was about to say, if you got that, that's probably worth a fortune. And you're like, nah, it's gone already. Nice.
Yeah.
Brilliant. How was working with James McMahon?
It was good. It was because a lot of the editors had came in up through the ranks and stuff. So, you know, someone new and someone who'd worked for the enemy, it was strange to get adjusted to. But I learned a lot from him and stuff. And it's a long, like, because I was sort of news editor. Then I kind of went through a quite rigorous interview process with him and Phil Alexander and stuff. But I learned a lot from him. And
While you had to go through that interview while you were already at Kerrang.
Yeah, so I was doing news and going off to do a job interview and not knowing about it for a little while, and I was just like, come on, please give me the job.
Yeah. Did they interview anybody else in the office for you at the time?
I don't honestly know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably, but it's not sort of thing you want to shout about in case it doesn't happen.
Yeah. No, yeah, I was just wondering if there was like a couple of you just in the office, just like, when do we find out?
Honestly can't remember. Yeah, it's so long ago now as well. So long ago.
Am I right in saying, though, that during that time, you actually got to spend a day in Metallica's inner circle?
I did that recently. Well, not recently. See, time has gone into this weird gloop where I can't differentiate days of the week. Last summer, when they played Barcelona, I just did a trip to Barcelona, which was the last who knows, last trip abroad. And it was like a reader's question thing. So it was a dead easy job. Lars and Kirk fielded the questions. And I got to just like hang around because they played an old Olympic stadium or something that had been used for the Olympics years and years ago. So it's just this cavernous kind of dressing room area. And just seeing like the true behind the scenes of like one of the biggest bands on the earth was amazing. Because like Maiden, Metallica were a band I grew up with. It was just amazing. You know, I saw James Hetfield walk past, and I've interviewed him on the phone for something, but I'd never sort of met him face to face. And he's so tall, it's ridiculous. And just seeing the amount of staff that all come together to pull like a stadium show like that, it's amazing. And at the end, they had loads of local crew who had like high-vis vests and matching hard hats, and they looked like doozers from Fraggle Rock from the distance.
Yeah,
they were just like, there were 50 of them ready to like this, because this stage had to be dismantled and in another country within 24 hours, and they were just like chumming at the bit, ready to go. And you just think, you know, it's not like five blokes carrying the ramps off stage, chucking them in a van. It's the degree of planning and organization. It was, you know,
yes,
something to behold.
It's insane, yeah. Did you get to see Metallica's Rider? Have they got anything weird? I just want to know, like...
I didn't really see the Rider, but they had, like... It looked like a kind of tuck shop for crew and band, so if they needed to buy something, like, whether it's deodorant or snacks, there was this dressing room that was set up like a shop, and I suppose you'd put your per diems in there, or...
That's mad.
What? I think it's because everyone's so busy or so famous, they can't really leave that little compound.
Okay.
So Metallica have got a travelling shop.
I think that's what it was. I just remember seeing socks and just things like stuff that you wouldn't normally think to buy.
Yeah, that's insane. It's like, yeah, have you heard of like I know they've got like they normally have a dressing room that's like a rehearsal room as well, that they go jamming beforehand.
Now, Ian Winwood went into that when he did them on the road, and I didn't get to do that, and I was so gutted.
Oh, bastard. Bloody Ian Winwood.
That's just made me think, though, that surely there's a job out there to be Metallica's shopkeeper.
Yeah.
I want that job. That would be... Imagine being their shopkeeper. That would be...
Imagine being their accountant and being like... You employ a shopkeeper for what? And they're like,
deductible.
He does fucking tough brushes on tour. Like, what?
But would they have to dress up like open all hours?
I mean, for four candles. that's nuts. I never. Do you know what? I've never thought about that. That's quite a clever thing, though. That's bonkers, because like I remember like when Blink, we did arenas with Blink, and like they all had a dressing room each, as far away from each other as they possibly could, ironically in a big triangle, which Tom DeLonge probably enjoyed, and they had like their own. Travis had his own vegan catering. Mark and Tom had to use a normal catering, and yeah, they were just apart from each other, but they never had anything like a shop or. I don't even think they had a room to get together. I don't even know if they got together before the shows. That was bonkers. I saw them all separately, but I never saw them together. And
that's mad, isn't it?
But I suppose if you're miles away from anyway, and you know you don't want the local shop situations. Like, I suppose if you just have everything you need,
yeah, it's genius.
I'm sure I didn't dream it, but there was stuff. Available, whether it was for money or just like a sort of on tick.
Yeah.
You know, well,
even if you dreamt it, that's a great idea for arena sized bands. So Simon, after this, me and you were having a discussion about writing a sitcom. Imagine this, the shop on tour. That's genius. I'm almost flabbergasted by it. It's such a good idea. I've never... Where else would James Hetfield be buying socks? He's not going to pre-mark in Cardiff, is he? He's just going to stay in the arena and he's going to... Unbelievable.
Ah, oh, crazy.
Oh, sorry, Mark.
Crazy. But I'd be interested to know about your time at Radio 1 with Daniel Picard. How did all that come about, and what was it like working as a producer?
So I knew Dan from I would bump into Dan before I'd even started a Kerrang, really, and just through A, I just got to know him through interviewing A, and he'd pop into the office and stuff when he was in London and things, and we'd just chat because we had similar taste in music. And there was one time he told me to mention this if I ever did a podcast where, so the Kerrang Awards, the Offspring had played live, and I think I was the Offspring's chaperone.
Was this on the boat? Did they have an after party on a boat?
They did one year, I think.
Yeah, that was my first ever Kerrang after party, and I remember this was the first time I was like, oh! I was having a piss in the toilet, and Noodle, or whatever his fucking name is, from Offspring turned up, and I was like, oh, the giant man from the Offspring! I couldn't believe it! but yeah, sorry, carry on.
It was in a hotel where they did, like, I'm sure that it was the Offspring, and maybe, I think, Air played. It's a bit of a haze now, but I was the Offspring's chaperone, and I'm sure they went on stage, and... the idea is you lead them to the stage, then you meet them on the other side stage and take them off to do all the press and stuff. Seal was there that year, and so was Adrian Edmondson and Jennifer Saunders. I remember that.
Wow.
And I didn't know what to do. I got them on the side of the stage, and I wasn't sure how to get to the side stage. So there was footage of me sniper crawling across the stage.
Oh, no.
Because the tables were right against the lip of the stage, so I couldn't really get around, and I panicked. And I kind of sniper crawled across everyone's noses. But I met the band on the other side of the stage, and my job was fulfilled.
Nice.
But apparently it looked mental.
Nice. And and then Dan Carter then. And then
he'd been he's been presenter of the Rock Show for a number of years now, and at the time he just said, our producer's going to be leaving, you know, in a few months or whatever, are you interested? Do you want us to put your name forward for an interview and stuff? And I was ready for a fresh challenge. Just, you know, I'd been at Kerrang for about 14 years at that point, and I'd always had an interest in audio, with the podcasts and stuff. And I just thought, you know, you don't really turn down a chance to work at Radio 1. On a show like The Rock Show with Dan, you know, to work with a mate in such a role, it's like, you'd be foolish not to try it at least. And had a few job interviews, and there was a kind of transition period where I had been sitting in on shows and stuff, and their producer, Karis, was like teaching me how to be a producer, really. And it was so stressful because there's just, you go into, you know, you see the desk, and it's like there's so many things to remember.
Oh, and yeah
programs to learn, and and there's this whole other thing about compliance where you've got to kind of go comb through all the lyrics, and kind of obviously there's certain swear words you're not allowed, or you've got to justify, and but this is like, you know, metal on top of that. So you'll have quite graphic depictions of scenarios and stuff, and you've got to kind of work out whether it's suitable for play or it, you know, then you've got to discuss it with, I can't remember the chain that you have to go through, but you have to kind of justify each song.
Yeah. How do you, how would you justify a swear word? Like, how would you, like, how would I get a song with a swear word? Would I have to be like, well, look, it's the point of the song.
Well, yeah, I mean, when he was on at midnight till 2, was it midnight till 2? It was easier because it was, you know, but then it went to like sort of mid-evening on Sundays and stuff. So you weren't allowed any before nine and after that, you kind of sort of justify and stuff. I think it was just, it didn't have to be gratuitous and stuff, but it was just stressful. And there's times I thought, have I, because you'd get the track and you put it on the computer for Dan to choose. And it's like, did I put the right track on? The adrenaline from after each show would take me hours to get back to go to sleep, because it would be just, everything's like on your shoulders because, you know, Dan's taking care of the show, and it's like, but if there's anything bad happens, it's all on me for that time. But it was brilliant.
Did anything, sorry to ask this, but did anything bad ever happen? Did you ever let any Killing in the Name full version?
It, not as bad as that, but there was one or two times where like some words would sneak through and stuff, and I would have to preempt any complaints by telling like the highest level.
Oh wow!
And explain.
Oh wow!
And it was, and I got chewed out once because it was like, this cannot happen again, and I was just felt so rubbish at everything. And then it happened again about a month later. And I was like, maybe it's not for me. Because you kind of live and die by the mistakes and stuff. But it was a fantastic experience. And I love working with Dan. But it's just the level of stress. It was because it's like, you know, it's going out to the country live. It's not like, oh, we can delete that swear word on a bit of paper. You know, it's just a totally different thing. But it was great, and I had loads of fun. And Dan used to, I used to go to the toilet before we'd go in, and Dan would make face masks and come in and scare the hell out of me when my nerves are at quite a high level already, and he would just come in and just scare the hell out of us.
Oh wow!
But yeah, it was good.
Yeah,
it was good fun.
I can only imagine how stressful that part of it was, because like, you know, I've got a background on radio and stuff. But, and there's been a few times where a few cheeky swear words have come through. So I can only imagine on that scale of a place like Radio 1, wouldn't want to face that wrath.
Yeah, because there's a lot of responsibility for that kind of thing, because, like, you know, because it's a publicly funded thing, you have to answer to certain things if it goes wrong. And it was just
Do you remember what song it was that... snuck through?
Oh, it was just a really sludgy, nasty thrash song, and I don't know what happened, because I knew it was a hot spot, and I there's so many things were going on maybe to get the show ready. I just overlooked it, and it was awful. It's terrifying. Just reliving the horror.
Sorry about bringing the trauma back.
Sorry, awesome. We have been told that these podcasts are like therapy for a lot of our guests. So so maybe
I feel good now.
You know what? I haven't done too bad.
Mentioning therapy,
segue
into talking about your new book.
Tell
us all about it.
How did it come about?
Right. So there's these books called 33 and a Third, where they're quite thin books, but they're kind of quite an in-depth look at a certain album in a band's career, and you pick your album and you pitch it to this company who publish about, I don't know how many publish a year, but it's they get a lot of interest every time they say, we're opening submissions now. And I was like, I really want to do something on therapy. So I messaged Andy and Michael just saying, are you cool with it if I do something maybe on Trouble Gum or Infernal Love? And they were like, yeah, and we'll do interviews if you know, fresh ones, if you want to do it and stuff. Then a little while later, I've got to say at this point, I'd known therapy basically since I started at Kerrang. So it was a good 20-year basis of, you know, I just sent a text because, you know, that's the year 2019 or whatever. And then they came back and just said, do you want to do a full biography? Because the 30th anniversary is coming up. And I think that there was ideas for books in the past, but it didn't happen for various reasons and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I can do it. I just said yes, because I thought, when do you get chances to do something like this? And, you know, especially with bands you've kind of listened to for 25 years or whatever. And so I met with Andy and Neil, the drummer, in London, and just had some lunch and just talked about it for a while. And I just said, I'll have to get a book deal. But one of the books I'd taken as an example of how we could do it was by Jawbone Press. And there was a book by, it was like King's X and All History. And it was just all the band talking about, you know, the various adventures and stuff. And but I really liked Jawbone's books. They had such a good back catalogue and they looked good. And it just looked like a great publishing house to kind of possibly, you know, approach and see what their ideas were. So while I was chasing that, we started just doing the interviews anyway. Because I suppose, you know, at the end of the day, you could self-publish it if you wanted to. You know, there's nothing stopping you from doing a book. But and they were interested in the idea, and they said, can you send us a sample chapter? So I spent, in hindsight, far too long crafting this one chapter out of 30 to, you know, submit as an example of what the book could be like. And it was about Infernal Love, and just because I just thought there was so much happening with the band at the time. And they got back to me a few weeks later and said, yeah, let's do it. So at the time, we have now, because we live in a terraced house in Hastings, and our basement was being ripped out and renovated and stuff. So during all these, because I would do the interviews like this on Skype and stuff like that, and you just hear hammering and drilling in the background. Oh, no. And you know, repeated requests for cups of tea or this needs paying for, and I'm trying to write a book, darling. So yeah, that was done then. So I gave myself it was all on sound files, and all the research had been done by Christmas. And I gave myself, well, they said, if you want it out by September, you're going to have it in by the end of March. So every night for 3 months, I was basically just sitting down and like, I'm not getting up until I've done the chapter, more or less. Then lockdown was announced a week before the deadline, and my brain just ground to a halt. I was just like, everything's too weird right now. And the last few pages, I kind of got in just in time, but it was just such a weird time to spend so much time on a book and feel this gradual global disaster creeping up on the news and stuff, you know, trying to concentrate on a book. But it was a great experience and stuff, and I'm really proud of it. And I would send the band chapters regularly just to make sure they were happy with what was in, and you know, if the stories were correct. And but Michael had like so many details. Like I was given access to a Word doc, which basically had every gig they'd ever played and any details with it. And I was like, who knows if I do another book, if I'll get access to that kind of that level of detail, because it made everything so much easier. But it was fantastic.
Yeah, that's nice. That's crazy to hear. But like, therapy of being a band who have such a incredible story. I mean, you know, they've been going, it's a 30th anniversary, they've had 15 albums, and the book really gets into that. The highs, the lows, the problems with drugs, sold out shows. I mean, the lot. Was it quite interesting to actually sit down and relive really everything they've been through?
Yeah, it was really interesting, because you know, there was stuff I knew inside out, and there was stuff when there was times when they were having difficulties with labels and stuff. From the outside, you wouldn't really guess that, you know, because therapy have been so consistent with touring and releasing stuff. You don't really pay attention to that kind of stuff that's going on behind the scenes. So when you hear them saying things were really difficult, and you just think, wow. And, you know, I was fairly close to the band being at Kerrang and having an idea of what their next moves were going to be. But when you hear them say that they had to fund, like they'd lost their deal with A&M and they had to sort of self-finance a tour from their own savings just to keep the band going. It's an amazing thing. And it just shows you the level of dedication they had to their own band and the fans to ensure that the people who bought the tickets would see them. And that was a tour I saw before I joined Kerrang. So, but you know, thinking back, you wouldn't have known that it was quite stressful for them at the time.
Yeah. Was there any other, obviously don't want to spoil the book. We want people to read the book, but was there any other like crazy moments that like really stood out for you with what they were doing, or
just from the early, like, you know, from the beginnings in Northern Ireland? Regrettably, I have a very vague idea of the whole political, you know, I know the basics and stuff, but reading more into it, I had no idea about certain things, but you know, that what really was happening in Northern Ireland. And you just hear that, you know, certain band members couldn't really go into collect keys for a rehearsal room because their surname might provoke a violent act, you know, because they didn't like not their religion, but you know, it just very fractious kind of times. And just that commitment to just playing music in, you know, sort of a war zone, I suppose, at times. Yeah. And they just stuck at it, and it molded them into the people they are today.
Awesome. Nice. Yeah. And there's me worried about the conspiracy theorists of Merthyr Tydfil. Well, they're the Northern Ireland conflicts, like. Grow up, Sean, will you? Grow up. You a couple of masked idiots, yeah. Cool.
Yeah. No, that's incredible. But yeah, but it missed, like, as you said, you listened to the band for years and stuff anyway, so to have all that access and be able to tell their story now must just be something that you're quite proud of, both professionally and from a fan's point of view.
Yeah, as a fan first and foremost, I'm still shocked that my name's attached to their 30-year story and it's theirs. It's not something I've done on my own in a secret room somewhere. It's like it's their book and my name's on it as well. It's really it's surreal, and I'm immense. It's been months since I finished it now, but I'm immensely, like, to hold it and look at it and have people ask about it, it's very surreal, but I'm immensely proud of it. And like, some people have been receiving books a few days early that did pre-orders and stuff, and it's just reignited the whole excitement of it coming out. Every time I see someone, like a friend in LA ordered it and got it already, someone in Chicago's got it. It's weird to think about that. My book's gone worldwide.
It's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's amazing. Would you like to do next? Is there anybody else you'd like? Would you keep doing like biographies, or would you want to do other things?
I'd love to do more biographies. I'm kind of talking to a couple of artists at the moment.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, but if I say their names out loud, I might jinx it forever.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll tell you afterwards.
Okay.
Please do.
But that'd be very exciting if those came off. I'd be floored again about, you know, to do either one. So fingers crossed for that. But because I've never really been a fiction person. I've always enjoyed reading about musicians and stuff. Yeah. So I'm not going to go off and do a Swords and Sandals fantasy epic set in Jarrow.
Therapy in space.
That'll be the follow-up. You know, it might be the safest place to play soon. So.
That's true, yeah.
I wonder how long till a band does play a gig up in space.
I guarantee Muse are thinking about, can we do a gig in space?
Yeah, it's going to be, if it is, it's going to be one of those, isn't it? It's going to be like a 30 Seconds to Mars. Like
Angels and Airwaves.
Yes, of course.
DeLong got the hookup. We know he can get up here. He's got the craft.
Maybe that's how he announces his return to Blink. They play on Venus.
Probably. I wouldn't put it past him. He's fucking nuts. would doing Metallica be the dream, I suppose?
Paul Brannigan and Ian Wonderwood have, I think if Metallica were to do it a book they would do it themselves, but Branigan and Wynne would have done that admirably with their own birth school.
Yeah.
Target Death.
Any Green Day book is Wynne Woods as well.
Yeah.
I had so many chats with Ian Winwood, and I never understood how a man could just blatantly love two bands so polar opposite of each other. Like, are we just every conversation I ever had with him, he would bring up Metallica. It would definitely wouldn't come from me, or Green Day, and that wouldn't come from me either. And every time I'm like, you've got the maddest taste in the only two bands you seem to like as well.
Yeah,
which is nuts for me.
I think if Green Day ever do a book, they should really put it in the hands of Winwood, because you know, who else to kind of to write their story. It was such a discipline to just sit down and write it. It was like writing 30 cover features in 3 months. And if you said that to someone, can you do that? It'd be like,
Jesus,
it's too much to even contemplate. But luckily, Jason Onop, who I used to work with at Kerrang, he saved my life by recommending this woman in Brighton called Helen, who was a transcriber. And if I had to transcribe, because I did about 70 hours of interviews and stuff, and I think if I had to transcribe, I did a fair bit, and some friends did some other parts, but if I had to do 70 hours of transcription before the book, I'd just be burnt out from hearing my own voice.
Yeah, there's that. I don't think people realize how long transcribing stuff takes as well, because probably my least favorite thing about journalism.
How do you get good at transcribing? And like this Helen, this mystical Helen that I've heard about now, does she listen to it like 3 times the speed and she can just type really fast, or how does...
I don't know. It was magical. The speed should return the sound files back.
Yeah. How much do you think she made up though? Therapy of reading a book and like, I never had a dog called Max. What do you want about? I was like, Helen from Brighton.
But it took a weight off my shoulders knowing that I could trust her to do all this.
Yeah.
Like, it just, the hard work really, because it's like pushing a rock up a hill. It just, because you're thinking, is this bit really important? And if it's important, do I, it's got to be exactly what they said. And it's just got all these things going around in your head as you're trying to hear the actual interview while you're transcribing it. And because, at the start, I asked people for advice about auto transcription services and apps and stuff, and none of them work, especially if it's a Geordie talking to someone from Northern Ireland. You might as well just stroke the keyboard with an oven mitt to get the same level of accuracy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. No one, when they create these things, they don't think of like a more obscure accents or ones that really have like a twang to it. Oh,
yeah. Well, people can't talk like me and Morgan, who sound like you've got fucking a mouthful of soup all the time. Yeah, we're fucked.
So I think if the biography was like the Queen, and I got like Stephen Fry to interview her,
it'd be fine.
Be transcribed fine, but right now, it's those apps are just, some of it's good. Like, it'll start out really well, then you read on through, and it's just like, is this person having a stroke? Because it's just, because it'll spell words probably, but they make no sense.
Yeah,
it's really strange. Yeah.
Is this the part in the interview where we started smoking crack together? Is that why this has all gone wrong?
And started to hallucinate.
Where can people pick the book up? Where can people get it from?
So it's been available on jawbonepress.com/therapy. The band were doing pre-orders with signed editions, but that run is sold out right now. And I think there's plans to do another batch of signed versions. Amazon So you can line Jeff Bezos' pockets.
Yeah,
because he
needs
built.
It. He needs it. The poor bugger. He needs it.
Absolutely he's strapped the last 6 months. I bet.
Yeah, fucking yeah.
Going to a Coinstar with a sock full of pennies.
Bag of change from under my bed.
And there's like Kindle and Apple Book versions as well.
Nice,
nice,
awesome.
So yeah, it's
Called So Much for the 30-Year Plan. Yeah, everybody check it out. Yeah, if you've enjoyed this, check out all of Simon's work. Follow Simon on Twitter. Simon, what's your Twitter?
I am Simon Young.
Oh, easy. Corking.
And we're going to fit in one more question, though, before you go, if that's good. As a fellow journalist, I would be remiss.
I'm a journalist too.
Sorry, we're both.
Have you ever seen a murder and not wanted to tell anyone?
We're both certified journalists, Sean. I don't know if.
Carry on. You know,
I've got a degree now. I don't know if you've heard about that.
I've written stuff in Quran.
I just wanted to get your advice for any like expiring journalists or like that trying to get in.
Did you just say wait here? I think you just said expiring journalists.
Yeah, ones are going out of date. Simon, is there any advice for them?
And if there's any journalists that are dying that you know of, could you give them any advice, please?
That's me after this, apparently.
Don't die.
That's great advice. No, but for anyone looking to get into it or is being had a career for a while and a bit stuck, I mean, is there any kind of advice or words you'd share that you think could help?
Well, the landscape's probably changed very, very drastically since I started. So I started by doing the fanzine, getting some work experience, and just learning on the job. I was so lucky to get into Kerrang when I did and get the opportunity I had. So for now, it's just such a fragile, increasingly fragmented marketplace. I think just write and read a lot and pitch ideas to websites you like, and you know they're always looking for new writers and things. So just write and practice your craft. I think that's all I can really offer. I was just very lucky, and I probably wouldn't stand a chance if I'd started right now. So
that's a lot of people's story, though. It's like. You've got to be good at it. Like, obviously, you are very, very good at it. But I think, a lot of people, it's just luck, just time and place. And, it's...
Just enjoy what you do and just keep practicing. Because you'll never perfect it, but you can get better at it, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Correct.
Exactly.
Good.
Well,
fantastic.
This has been a hell of a conversation. Thank you so much for taking time.
Thank you. I've really appreciated it. And thanks for having us on.
Yeah, no worries. I hope I get to see you in the flesh at some point soon. Probably won't now till about 2022 or whatever. Stay safe and see you soon, hopefully.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks again, and thanks, Morgan.
You're listening to Sammy Morgan!
Yes!
Quality!
Awesome.
Yes!
Awesome.
Thank you very much to my friend, and not Morgan's friend, Simon Young, for that very, very interesting chat. Sorry for anybody who's allergic to dog barks.
Yeah, sorry if that set off any animals in your house and stuff. Maybe the dog was trying to get on the podcast to connect with other animals to rule the world. Ooh, I've just taken this dog.
No, not having that, because they don't think like that, they're not that intelligent. So,
okay, right.
You're giving animals more credit than they actually deserve, which it seems to be a running theme in the world right now.
I want to circle back, though. You said he's not my friend. I know that's the first time meeting him, but I'd like to think we've got a friendship now, because he's much more experienced than me, but I'm a journalist as well, so I'm one of his people. Like, we're one and the same.
That's not what I heard, anyway.
What did he tell you?
I won't say any more, but I spoke to him off air, and that's all I could say.
Anyway, thank you so much, Si, for coming on. Great chat.
Pointless thanking him. He doesn't care what you've got to think.
Yeah, well... Does he not care that he has a new book out and I was just going to promote it just now?
Oh, again. Go on. You better add. Go on.
Okay. Well, So Much for the 30-Year Plan, the biography by Therapy, is available everywhere right now, unless it's sold out, then you've got to pre-order it again.
And then it's available absolutely fucking nowhere. Brilliant. It's available everywhere, unless it's sold out, then it's available nowhere. So yeah, check it out. So much for the 30-year plan. Simon Young and Therapy with a Question. Therapy?
Yeah.
That's how we should have... Every single time we should have said Therapy, we should have said Therapy, because they've got a bloody question mark on the end. Like putting a V in the middle of a name.
Is that better or worse than the V, though? The question mark? Because you've got to say it. You've got to say Therapy?
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 Therapy? You always do sound surprised, don't you? Who's playing? Therapy! Yeah, they're headlining. Oh, no, I know. They're one of my favourite bands. Ooh, Therapy! Yeah! Why do you sound so surprised? No, it's their fault. Yes, I prefer that over the Vs.
Okay, nice, nice.
Yeah. I've seen a band over the last couple of weeks who have... They have either done it specifically... I saw in a band a couple of weeks ago who have got an A in their name and a V. Right?
That's not allowed.
And the V is replicating an A.
It's one or the other.
Yeah, they either don't know what they're doing, or they've perfected the exact way to piss me off. And if they have, congratulations. If they've done that, just so I'll talk about them, well done to them. Landmarks. There's a band called Landmarks. LANDMVRKS. I'm not having it. I'm not having a V. No.
Landmarks.
Landmarks. Yeah, that's okay. What I'll be calling them from now on. Das Landmarks, because I think they're German.
But go and pick up so much of the 30-year plan. It's available to download as well, so you can get it wherever. But anyway, thanks again to Simon Young. It was a great chat. And if you've enjoyed this and want to send us a message, then why not head over to our Twitter and Instagram pages at Sapnin Pod to do so, and be very, very nice, please.
Yes, at SAPPENINPOD, at Sapnin Pod. That's all I'm saying. Cheers.
Okay, and we've got loads of celebrations coming very, very soon. I guess from next week, maybe. Maybe I've said too much, but we're fast approaching our 100th episode. Next week is the last one with double digits. We go to 3 digits then, which is, that's an extra space on the graphic. It's an extra space on your phone.
It's going to fucking really piss off the graphic. For those who don't know, this is all pretty much self-done. So, like, we edit it, we record it ourselves, we both come up with artwork for it, and now I've just realised, now we've got more digits, it's less room on the artwork.
But on the positive side, we've got loads of goodies to celebrate the fact that our 100th episode is coming up. So not only subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast to get notifications about it and to keep updated, but if you head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin, we're putting up loads of exclusive content and goodies on our Patreon, and we're going to be doing a virtual meetup. We'll possibly be doing a Q&A session. There's going to be great laughs, and you get to meet your new best friends who are all absolutely lovely, and we care about every single one of them so much. So come and join our mad celebration period of Sapnin podcast. Viva our Patreon, patreon.com/sapnin.
Yes, and what Morgan failed to say there was, if you've listened to 5 or more episodes, you are now absolutely, definitely in line to sign up for the Patreon. So please check it out. Thank you very much.
And while we're speaking of our Patreon as well, we need to say a massive shout out to not only everyone involved. If you head over to the description of this episode, loads of names in there we love to thank. But we're going to give a... Round of applause to the elite members of our Patreon page. They've probably changed. I don't know where I'm going with this, because basically what happens, if you listen to this for the first time, the elite members of our Patreon change their names to some weird funny shit that we have to read out. We don't know what it is beforehand, and Sean's going to do it for their little bit of giggles right now. So here it is.
Right, here we go. Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Thank you very much to the fantastic Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwoway, Mitch Perry, Samantha Spray, na 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 na, fucking na 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 na, which is the riff to the song I Still Function, which is available now by Raiders UK on everywhere. Thank you very much, Sarah, for putting that as your name. Emma Barber, Janelle Caston, Amadine Urbano, Kelly Young, Dilly Simpson's Diddick Grimwood, Nathan Croshaw. Got it bad, got it bad, got it bad. I'm hot for Morgan. And of course, that is a reference to Van Halen, Hot for Teacher. Rest in peace, Eddie Van Halen. What a bloody guitarist. Drew, Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman Styles, who I saw a picture of yesterday while he was out doing his fantastic day job. He had a beard full of wood. That's all I'm saying. Thank you very much to Liam Connolly, Kelly Irwin, Michael Engler, Tom Owen, Amy Campion, Johnny Phillips, Kate Gentleman, Preferred Ginger's Puttack, Bar Weep Grang Weep Knee Knee Bong. I don't know what that is. Simon Amos, Jodie Shannon, Ollie Saxophone Is Not a Brass Instrument, Amesbury. Right on. Luckily it's not. Kate Stevenson, Morg won't accept my friend request, so I'm boycotting his puns. That's fair enough. Jenny Sexy Boy Munster, Dana Lasnova, Lucy Deeds, Martina McManus, Emily Senegals, Kevin Clark, Erin Hour, John and Emma, Becky Andy, Kelly Raiders, a chock full of riffs like a candy bar, Mallory, thank you very much, Louis Cook, Nuala Clark, Jason Heredia, Mike Cunningham, Marcy Jacobson, Sandra Kuacek, James McNaught, Livy Cropper, Carl Pendlebury, Kelly Emma Cannon, Tallulah Grant, Tony Michael, Sharifa O'Dally, Stuart McNaught, Jenny Robinson, and last by no means least, Lydia Henderson. Thank you very much to all of those heroes. You are absolutely superstars. Also, I want to give a shout out to Tim Watley,
yes,
who's one of our Patreons, who is on his way to defeating cancer. And he's currently going through chemotherapy. So just wanted to say, stay strong. You're going to fucking do this. And we're all going to do a bloody mosh next year somewhere. So let's fucking get this sorted. Cheers, Tim, for your support. Cheers for giving us a fucking listen, to be honest. Thank you to everybody. And yeah, everybody who's joined lately, you are absolute superstars. And thank you so, so much. We appreciate you massively.
We really, really do. Sending our love to every single person involved. Without your constant support, I don't know where the hell we would be. But just a couple of very quick things. A, sending all our love as well to the Van Halen family, because that was terrible news this past week. Such an influential guitarist. Mad. Who said I'm not accepting friend requests? Well, I don't, to be fair, because Facebook I hardly use. I only use it for our secret Patreon group, and that's about it, really. So I mean, Instagram and Twitter is the best place to get me at @mhrichards_. Yes, got a plug-in. And how's everything going with Raiders, Sean? Because obviously you released a new single last week called I Still Function.
Well remembered again, thank you. Yes, it's going all right, yeah, thanks.
Oh, tiny, all right, yeah, cool.
Yeah, as somebody might have seen, we've been announced again for 2000 Trees next year. We released a Thrice cover. Yeah, and I Still Function is out now and available from raidersbanduk.bandcamp.com. So please check it out. And it's also available to stream wherever you steal music from, because that's what it is.
Nice.
Thanks. I just alienated all our listeners with it. You thieving shits.
Wow.
But yeah, cool. Please check Raiders out wherever you can. Please share it if you like it. If you don't like it, share it anyway to people who might go listen to this shit, because that all helps. And also, if you check out our socials at @RaidersBandUK on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, there's clips up there, and there's clips of the end of Destructible, where it goes, everything is turned to shit, fuck yeah, which would be perfect for TikToks or anything you want to use it for. So have a think, see how you can use it, and get back to us.
See, Sean, you're always thinking of other people and just providing them with content they can use for themselves. I like it.
Oh, no, I just want more streams.
Yeah, I know, but I was trying to put a positive spin on it, so it didn't sound like you were being selfish.
Probably listened to it. If they've got this far, yeah, they've listened to other episodes, right? So they know me.
But I'm just trying to help.
No, I know, I get that, and I appreciate it more, but pointless. Absolutely pointless.
Okay.
This has been a fantastic episode that I have enjoyed very, very much. It's very, very insightful into the world of journalism and rock. Like, just getting out to hang out with Metallica. That's mental, isn't it?
Yeah. Metallica shop.
But, yeah, cool. Yeah. Bonkers. On to a shop. Never thought of it. Might be the... it can't be a future career move. Rishi Sunak said we've all got to retrain. by next week I might have opened the pizzeria because I had to retrain.
What's the name?
We'll see.
What's the name of your pizzeria? Please, you've got... Oh, there's got to be a pun somewhere. What?
Have you got one? You look like you got one. You better not fucking have one. Go on. Let's hear it. Look at you. You've gone red. You're holding it in. You've gone red. Your head looks like it's going to explode.
It's awful.
Go on.
It's high dough, baby. That's how bad it is.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So gonna have to open a pizzeria now, because I can't carry on doing this with you after that. That's dreadful. I'm gonna be thinking this all day now.
This is why we can't have sliced things.
But we sell sliced things, that's the thing, isn't it? Unless we do unsliced pizzas. You have to buy all pizza, take it home and slice it yourself, like. Kind of like Dr. Martin's do with shoes, we do with pizzas. You've got to finish these yourself. Go on.
You've got to break them in.
Spend a fortune on these massively stiff boots, and tell you what, wreck your ankles and fucking Achilles heel for 6 months so you can finish off the job that we should have done as professional shoe salesmen. Oh, don't start me on Dr. Martin's.
Okay. But if Dr. Martin's are listening and would like to sponsor us, I don't mind wearing a pair and have my feet bleed just to... I'll sell my feet for money. That's what I'm saying. And not in that weird, kinky way. This has gone way too long. Give us your Sean Smith pizza puns at @SatmanPod on Twitter and Instagram. I'm looking forward to these. You better fucking give them to us. Otherwise, you're going to have very angry Morgan. I've gone...
It's
a lot of emotions. You're crying.
Fucking hell. It's all gone wrong. Let's stop.
Okay.
Let's stop now before we lose everybody.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone. We love you very, very much. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for giving us a fucking moment of your time. If you've got this far, again, congratulations. because I'm sorry that we talk so much shit, but I enjoy it, and I enjoy getting to speak to these bands and other people. So thank you so, so much for your support. We'll see you next week on episode 99 of Sapnin Podcast.
Whee! Party!
Unbelievable. Tidy. Fucking Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.